Today is Friday, May 14th, and you are listening to International Edition and the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, fighting escalates between Israel and Palestine.
The violence between Israeli forces and Palestinian militants entered a fifth day on Friday with fresh airstrikes, artillery fire, and rocket attacks.
Plus, the CDC eases mask-wearing guidance for fully vaccinated Americans.
If you've been fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask.
Also, Australia to create two new global maritime parks in the Indian Ocean. Our top story today is in Israel. Israel fired artillery and mounted more airstrikes on Friday against Palestinian militants in the Gaza Strip amid constant rocket fire deep into Israel's commercial center as fighting escalates. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
The violence between Israeli forces and Palestinian militants entered a fifth day on Friday with fresh airstrikes, artillery fire, and rocket attacks. The Israeli military said in a statement shortly after midnight, the air and ground forces were attacking Gaza. Rocket barrages from the Hamas-run enclave swiftly followed. Witnesses said many families living in areas of Gaza near the border fled their homes, some seeking shelter at United Nations-run schools. On Thursday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said his country's military campaign will take more time.
The defense activity of Iron Dome batteries is giving us an offensive space, and the IDF has already attacked hundreds of targets. We will soon pass 1,000. We continue striking Hamas while defending our citizens.
A funeral was held on Thursday for Hamas commander killed in the Israeli strikes. Since Monday, more than 100 people have been killed in Gaza, including dozens of children, medical officials said. On the Israeli side, authorities said 7 people had been killed, including a soldier who was laid to rest on Thursday. International calls for an end to the hostilities have so far had no effect, as both sides show no sign of stepping down. Tension has also spread to inside Israel, with violent clashes reported in mixed communities of Jews and the Arab minority, prompting Israel's president to warn of a civil war. The Israeli city of Lod was on edge Thursday night as police patrolled the streets and made arrests. The city has seen rioting, burning of cars, and violent attacks on individuals. The UN Security Council will publicly discuss the worsening crisis on Sunday, diplomats said, after the US earlier objected to a meeting on Friday. The 15-member council has met privately twice this week, but it has so far been unable to agree on a public statement. Israel's escalating military conflict with Gaza is the worst since the 2014 war.
Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. Israel said it was massing troops along the Gaza frontier and calling up 9,000 reservists ahead of a possible ground invasion of the Hamas-led territory as the two bitter enemies plunge closer to an all-out war. Egyptian mediators rushed to Israel for ceasefire efforts but showed no sign of progress. The stepped-up fighting comes as communal violence in Israel erupted for a fourth night, with Jewish and Arab mobs clashing in the flashpoint town of Lod. The fighting took place despite a bolstered police presence. The four-day burst of violence has Israel in the most intense fighting it has ever had with Hamas, while coping with the worst Jewish-Arab violence inside Israel in decades. Individuals involved in a new eruption of Israeli-Palestinian bloodshed may be targeted by an International Criminal Court investigation now underway into alleged war crimes in earlier bouts of the conflict, its top prosecutor said in an interview. The ICC's Fatou Bensouda told Reuters on Wednesday she would press ahead with her inquiry, even without the cooperation of Israel, which accuses her office of anti-Semitic bias, and like its closest ally, the United States, rejected membership in the treaty-based court, objecting to its jurisdiction.
These are events that we're looking at very seriously. We are monitoring also very closely. And I remind that investigations have opened, and this, the evolution of these events could be something that we will also look at in the course of our investigations. I think this is just to alert people not to escalate, to be careful, and to avoid taking actions that will result in the commission of Rome Statute crimes. People are very, very passionate about this particular situation, and we all know that. But I cannot be guided by that, by passion. I cannot be guided by threats. I cannot be guided by praise, even. I have to make sure that my actions are anchored in the law and legally justified for me to move forward.
That's International Criminal Court outgoing prosecutor Fatou Bensouda. The United Nations agencies report difficulties in providing assistance to many of Gaza's 2 million residents amid escalating violence in Palestinian territory and Israel. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN officials are expressing alarm at the rising number of casualties and suffering of civilians on both the Palestinian and Israeli sides of the conflict. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says the intensified fighting is hampering UN efforts to provide aid to the Palestinians in Gaza. OCHA says more than 200 housing units in densely populated areas of Gaza reportedly have been destroyed or severely damaged. OCHA spokesman Jens Lajerke says the fighting has disrupted teaching in 31 education facilities, including schools, vocational training centers, and higher education facilities.
Reports of hundreds of people, many from refugee camps in Gaza, seeking shelter in UNRWA schools, especially in the northern part of the strip. UNRWA says that it has experience in quickly turning its schools into shelters, but the challenge is the pandemic and the risk of people crowding and spreading the virus.
Lajerke says the North Gaza seawater desalination plant is still not operational, affecting access to clean water for an estimated 250,000 people. He says Israel's closure of the Erez and Kerem Shalom crossings a few days ago is preventing goods and fuel from entering Gaza, adding to the hardship of the population.
Humanitarians continue providing assistance on the ground, but the current insecurity significantly restricts the delivery of essential services, including the ongoing COVID-19 response. The number of tests conducted is drastically reduced, and people are unable to access treatment and vaccination facilities safely.
OCHA is calling for an immediate de-escalation of violence across the occupied Palestinian territory and Israel. It says the parties to the conflict have an obligation to protect civilians and allow humanitarian relief to reach those in need. Israel has come under fierce attack from rockets launched by Hamas and other groups in Gaza. U.S. President Joe Biden has expressed support for Israel's right to defend itself, but has said he hoped the fighting would end sooner than later. The U.N. Security Council is expected to meet Sunday to discuss the situation in Israel and Gaza. American Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield has said the U.S. will continue to actively engage in diplomacy at the highest levels to try to de-escalate tensions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The CDC has eased its mask-wearing guidance for fully vaccinated Americans, a major step towards returning the nation to pre-pandemic life. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Today is a great day for America.
President Biden is summing up the new guidance.
If you've been fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask.
The CDC says there are exceptions. All people, vaccinated or not, should still wear masks in crowded indoor settings like hospitals and while traveling. But there's no need in most indoor settings and outdoors, even in crowds.
This is an exciting and powerful moment.
CDC Chief Rochelle Walensky says the unvaccinated should still wear masks indoors. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The United States has completed its withdrawal from Kandahar airfield in southern Afghanistan, once the second largest military base in the country for U.S. forces, officials said Friday. A spokesman for the Afghan army in Kandahar confirmed the U.S. forces have left. An official handover is expected to take place after the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Fitr, which ends on Saturday, Afghan officials said. At its height, the airfield was the second largest base for U.S. and international troops. Kandahar province was the birthplace of the Taliban and has in recent months seen intense clashes between militants and Afghan forces. The Taliban and Afghan forces are currently in the middle of a three-day ceasefire, which has granted respite for Afghans across the country as they celebrate the Muslim holiday. The U.S. military did not immediately comment. With the withdrawal from Kandahar, the U.S. military has completed about 10% of its pullout from Afghanistan. But defense officials left members of Congress with more questions than answers this week as the U.S. moves closer to President Biden's September 11th withdrawal deadline. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
while U.S. troops are engaged in a complete withdrawal from Afghanistan, top defense leaders gave no answers to lawmakers on how to solve several lingering problems.
We're here and we're working on it. I'm of the opinion this should have been resolved before you announced you were leaving.
Unanswered questions include, how will the U.S. continue to train its Afghan partners?
We are still doing, you know, planning on how we would be able to provide, you know, the type of support that's necessary, you know, from an over-the-horizon posture.
And where to base American forces so military and intelligence assets can continue identifying and taking out regional terror threats.
We have to maintain what's called access, basing, and overflight. And those are the discussions that we're having.
Virtually all members of Congress at the hearing wanted the Pentagon to quickly find a way to provide special immigrant visas to Afghans who helped U.S. personnel. Roughly 18,000 Afghans have applied for these visas out of fear the Taliban will kill them once the U.S. has left. Congressman Jason Crow's Afghan colleague was murdered by the Taliban in January.
Assassins jumped out and gunned him down in front of his son. A couple of weeks later, his eldest son received this death threat from the Taliban. He and many others like him will soon die unless we act.
Members from both political parties said the withdrawal is the right thing to do after years of military stalemate.
You cannot tell me that after 20 years that doing the same thing for another 1, 2, 5, or 10 would have changed that. So we would have been asking people to die to not accomplish anything.
But other Republicans and Democrats worry the Taliban, which still has ties to al-Qaeda, may overrun the Afghan government without a U.S. military presence.
I'm really concerned that we're turning the country over to people who have every intent to develop an ability to come back and attack the United States.
If the government falls, many fear the U.S. military may need to re-enter the country, costing an unknown number of American dollars and lives to reestablish bases and retake territory. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken released the State Department's annual International Religious Freedom Report, singling out Iran, Myanmar, Russia, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, and China as some of the world's worst violators of what Blinken termed a core human right. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
China's systematic surveillance and massive detention of Uyghur Muslims is highlighted in this year's International Religious Freedom Report, as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced Wednesday.
China broadly criminalizes religious expression and continues to commit crimes against humanity and genocide against Muslim Uyghurs and members of other religious and ethnic minority groups. Today, I'm announcing the designation of Yu Wei, former office director of the so-called Central Leading Group Preventing and Dealing with Heretical Religions of Chengdu, for his involvement in gross violations of human rights, namely the arbitrary detention of Falun Gong practitioners. Yu Wei and his family are now ineligible for entry into the United States.
China rejects claims of genocide and crimes against humanity and says it is countering extremism in Xinjiang using vocational education centers. But senior State Department official Daniel Nadell said China has essentially turned the entire region into an open-air prison. Satellite images also document China's desecration and destruction of mosques in Xinjiang. Blinken also called out other offenders, including Iran and Russia, for targeting religious minorities.
In Nigeria, courts continue to convict people of blasphemy, sentencing them to long-term imprisonment or even death. Yet the government has still not brought anyone to justice for the military's massacre of hundreds of Shia Muslims in 2015. Saudi Arabia remains the only country in the world without a Christian church, though there are more than a million Christians living in Saudi Arabia.
Blinken also called on Saudi Arabia to free prisoners of conscience like blogger Raif Badawi, who was sentenced in 2014 to 10 years in prison and 1,000 lashes for allegedly insulting Islam and encouraging debate, Riyadh found objectionable. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
A top immigration official pledged a comprehensive response to the influx of unaccompanied minors at the U.S.-Mexican border Thursday. In a testimony on Capitol Hill, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas told concerned lawmakers a migrant crisis early in the Biden administration has been contained. VOA Congressional Correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
U.S. President Joe Biden renews his push for immigration reform Friday with a White House meeting with recipients of DACA, a program providing legal status to undocumented immigrants brought to the United States as children. A renewal of that program, broadly popular with the American public, passed the U.S. House earlier this year and is now stalled in the evenly divided Senate. Senate Republicans say the Biden administration has a crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. Republican Senator Rob Portman.
The crisis today is unprecedented, far worse than it was last year, and even substantially worse than 2019, when everyone considered it a crisis.
The administration pushed back Thursday, saying that was the result of Trump-era immigration policies. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
We are dedicated to an orderly, safe, and humane immigration system. And therefore, we stopped the prior administration's policy of expelling the unaccompanied children. We did not turn them away.
The number of unaccompanied minors at the border has fallen to fewer than 500 this week. Democratic Senator Alex Padilla.
In March, there were more than 5,000 children who were in Border Patrol custody specifically, each spending an average 115 hours in Border Patrol facilities. But as of this last Tuesday, I understand there's 455 children in Border Patrol custody, each spending an average of 28 hours. In those facilities. That's a dramatic decrease in both the number of children in custody and the time spent in Border Patrol custody.
Apprehensions of adults at the U.S.-Mexico border have risen, but that number reflects undocumented adults' repeated attempts to cross. Vice President Kamala Harris has been tasked with solving some of the root problems of migration, a mission Republicans say will not be enough. Republican Senator Mitt Romney.
We can't solve all the problems of the world, let alone the problems in Latin America and the problems here in our country. Do you agree with this, that we have to focus on enforcing our border, finishing the border barrier, using the technology? By the way, if it's technology, use technology, but somehow deal with this in an urgent and aggressive manner.
Senator, we are indeed focused on securing our border and, in fact, using technology is the most effective, or one of the most effective ways of doing it, number one.
Increased funding for border security would likely be part of any deal worked out to pass Democratic lawmakers' sweeping immigration reform proposal introduced earlier this year. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. An online petition calling for the Tokyo Olympics to be cancelled has been submitted to the Tokyo government with over 350,000 signatures on Friday morning. The rollout of the petition comes with Tokyo, Osaka, and several other areas under a state of emergency with coronavirus infections rising, particularly new variants. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. India received coronavirus help from European Union countries in the wee hours of Friday morning. Aircraft that carried 223 ventilators, 25,000 vials of the drug Remdesivir, and other medical equipment from Germany, 3,000 vials of Remdesivir from Netherlands, and 5,500 vials of Remdesivir from Portugal landed in the Indian capital early morning. India on Friday reported 143 new coronavirus cases over the last 24 hours, taking its overall caseload past the 24 million mark, while deaths from COVID-19 rose by 4,000. A South African report into excess deaths over the past year suggests more than 133,000 people in the country have died from COVID-19, far more than the official tally of nearly 55,000. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
A report in South Africa suggests that the country's death toll from coronavirus may be over twice as big as the government's official tally and could place it into the top five worst hit places on Earth. The South African Medical Research Council, or SAMRC, has been monitoring excess deaths there since May 2020. That means comparing how many people would be normally estimated to die in a population over a specific time frame, be it from accidents or natural causes or other reasons, with how many actual deaths were logged. In its latest report, published on Wednesday, the SAMRC said South Africa had seen over 133,000 excess deaths, which they believe are COVID-related, in the past 12 months. That's 78,000 higher than the official toll of around 55,000. South Africa implemented one of the world's most restrictive lockdowns from March 2020, when cases were still relatively low. The SAMRC said increases in weekly deaths due to the pandemic only became evident from May 2020 onwards. Excess death figures surpass official COVID-19 death figures in many countries. Some epidemiologists say looking at excess deaths is the best way to measure the true toll of COVID-19, given that counting methods vary between countries. The health ministry declined to comment immediately on the report.
That's Roya Ali of Reuters. Australia says it will create two new globally significant maritime parks in the Indian Ocean. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia plans to add an area of the Indian Ocean bigger than France or the US state of Texas to its network of marine parks. A reserve would be set up around Christmas Island, which is about 1,500 kilometres west of the Australian mainland. The island houses a high-profile Australian offshore immigration centre for asylum seekers and is also well known for a spectacular annual migration of millions of red crabs. The region is the only known spawning ground for the critically endangered southern bluefin tuna. The other marine sanctuary would encompass the Cocos Keeling Islands. The Coral Archipelago is another Australian external territory and is home to about 600 residents. The islands lie about halfway between the city of Perth and the South Asian island nation of Sri Lanka. Christmas Island and the Cocos Keeling Islands are considered by experts to be biodiversity hotspots in the Indian Ocean, which is under pressure from industrial fishing, climate change and pollution. The proposed marine parks would cover a combined area up to 740,000 square kilometres of ocean. It has the support of many environmental groups. Christabel Mitchell, the National Director of the Save Our Marine Life Alliance, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation the group welcomes the plan.
This is a very exciting opportunity. This commitment by the Morrison government is of global significance. These are the world's next big marine parks. This could cover an area twice the size of the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park and be a huge step forward towards protecting our national marine treasures.
Australian authorities are starting talks with the island communities and the commercial fishing sector. Australia has established 60 marine parks around the country. Officials say they help conserve habitats and the various species that rely on them. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great weekend.